head around. It's time to break it down. Make a brand new sound. I'm here to demystify.
Step into the Parenting Cipher, your friendly space where we break down special education terms, spotlight vital resources, and support you in championing your child's success at home and school. It's like catching up with an old friend who truly gets it. Each episode is tailored to uplift and strengthen your entire family. We also feature insightful experts to shed light on the essential services your child can benefit from. Join our growing community. Please subscribe, rate, and review. Your input shapes our journey. Let's navigate, learn, and grow together. Self-confidence, the key, let's unlock it up. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Parenting Cipher. I'm your host, Jeannie Dawkins. It's been a long time for some of us, and for you. And if you're listening new, welcome to the Parenting Cipher. So, it's Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month, and as a parent of a child, actually children, with autism, I wanted to talk about demystifying autism and understanding the spectrum. Today, I'm going to share some insights, clear up some misconceptions, and help us all embrace the beautiful diversity of the autism community. Today's episode is all about understanding autism spectrum disorder and the wide array of experiences it encompasses. So let's start from the beginning. What exactly is autism spectrum disorder? And as for those of us in the community, we say ASD. So autism spectrum disorder is a developmental disorder that affects communication, behavior, and social interactions. The spectrum nature of autism means that no two individuals with autism are exactly alike. That's why it's called the spectrum, like a rainbow. Symptoms and its severity can, vary person to person. So, I have two kids. I have four, but I have two children with an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. They have similarities, but they are different. So, for instance, my oldest son, with his autism spectrum, it has a strong social component where it may be a little bit difficult for him to engage with people. Versus my youngest son, he has autism spectrum disorder, but he has the social component as well as a sensory component. So let's talk about the spectrum. Like, what does that mean? So I like to think of autism spectrum disorder like an umbrella. And under this umbrella, you can have sensory disorder, you can have dyslexia, you can have dyscalculia, you can have ADHD, you can have, I'm trying to think, what else do my children have? Sometimes you can have, it depends on the person, you might have some underdevelopments, it could be physically and, and developmentally. So, that is what autism spectrum means. You'll never see two children look alike, right? You may see similarities, especially when it comes to the social component, but they're never going to be the same. There's variance in degrees. So now let's talk about the common myths and misconceptions, right? So there's a lot of misinformation out there about autism. For instance, some people believe that autism is caused by vaccines, which is completely unfounded at this point. However, if you are into holistic medicine, I'm just going to say that, no one's going to tell that community it's not vaccines. I have my personal views, not so much about vaccines, but just as the state of the medical world today and how it may have influences. But right now, scientific research has totally debunked this myth time and time again. Another misconception is that autistic individuals don't want social interactions. And in reality, that's not true. It's just, it can be awkward. Doesn't mean that they don't want to talk to people. So for instance, my son Asar, for those who listen to the podcast, my son's names are Asar and Xavier. And for my son Asar, He could talk. He had a speech disorder. So that was one part of it, which means that he had some articulation. People couldn't understand him when he spoke. So that was one reason why he hesitated to engage. But now my son is 16 years old and he'll tell you, it's just awkward. Like, it's awkward to talk to people. You know, it's awkward to try to connect with people. He says sometimes he has people that are his friends, but when he's sitting at the table with them, he feels like he's just there. So he has like 110%, he wants to engage, but it's just difficult for him. But once he warms up to people and people reach out, and we have been doing some therapies. So for any of the listeners out there who have children with autism spectrum disorder, and your child is moving to the space in their world where they will need to interact without us. Okay, that's the key point. Without us, you may want to look into play therapy. I know that word play, you know, you're talking about a whole 16-year-old, but my son has a play therapist, is someone actually in college, and it helps him warm up to interacting with people that have the same interests as him. So, you know, that has been really helping him connect with people, and actually, you know, social, it's basically widened his social awareness. So like now he has friends. Sometimes it could be a little like, mom, why do they keep saying this? Or mom, I find it irritating when they do that. So he's like navigating that, being people's friends, and I'm here for it. I love it. But it's been supported by his interactions with the play therapist. So they 100% want to interact, but sometimes it's different. Now, that's my 17-year-old. Now, let's talk about my 12-year-old. He loves to talk. However, one of the things that you do see when it comes to autism is you may see, you know, in media, like the child who, you know, doesn't say anything, or the child who just randomly spouts out facts. Okay, well, my son is that. He randomly spouts out facts. He wants to talk about what he wants to talk about. And he comes and talks to me like, yeah, he's been having this conversation with me the entire time. So I will say to him, you know, Xavier, baby, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm going to need you to explain it to me so we can really have a conversation. So he's learning how to interact with people in a way that, you know, most people do. But he wants to talk to people. He might talk your ear off, right? However, he used to be the child that would only hyper-focus on his interests. Now he is interested in other people. You know, once again, that also comes from different therapies that, you know, my children have done. And just to, you know, say it, my children are in therapy not because one of the other misconceptions and arguments, you know, in the autism spectrum space sometimes is that, you know, sometimes therapists are trying to force a normalization on children. And that, you know, could be true, could not be true. For me, it's not so much that I want my children to become normalized. I want my children to be able to be aware of and interact with people where it's good for them, right? And also understand that, you know, I think everyone needs to hear this. Autism spectrum is that. It's a spectrum. You can have an individual where soon as you come up to that individual, you can tell, you know, there's something. You can have an individual where you can't tell. You can't tell until a situation occurs. You can't tell until they may do something. And then you're looking at that person like, what's wrong with you? And I don't necessarily want my children to have to go through that. I want them to be aware. So with that, we've done some therapies. We did something called integrated listening systems. You know, that has been life-changing for us. Like I said, my 17-year-old was diagnosed when he was 9. My son really didn't talk to anybody, not even me. He did like maybe 2 months of integrated listening systems. And one day I was in a store and I heard a little voice say, hello. I was, hello, who is that? And it was Asar, and he was talking to, first of all, a stranger, and he said, hello, are you shopping for your kids? Are you trying to find toys for your kids? And she says, no, I have grandkids. He says, so what do they like? And that was like the beginning of his socialization. He would ask me questions like, mommy, what do you like? And I would say, I don't know. He would say, let's think about it. Like, I know that you like to read. You know, those are those moments that when we talk about children on the, not just children, adults on the spectrum, it is a misconception that they don't want to be social, right? It's that bridge of how can they connect with other people to be social. So, you know, that's a misconception. Don't believe it. I also want to, since we're talking about the spectrum, I also want to talk about misconceptions, you know, as a parent. I remember when Asar was first diagnosed, and the doctor said, well, your son has a progressive neurological disorder. I can't remember the term of it. It was back in the day, that was the term, but they changed the diagnosis to autism spectrum disorder. But I just looked at her blankly, and she said, autism, you know, what do you think about that? And I immediately thought, like my kid doesn't bang his head, because back then that was the only thing that you knew about it or you saw about it. And I was like, no, that's not my kid, you know. And I went home and I went and really started doing research until I found someone's blog from a mom who was talking about her son. And I was like, oh, wow, like that's my son. So, you know, when it comes to media and autism spectrum, you know, it tends to be like, you know, too far left or too far right sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you'll find some that are in the middle. So, you know, don't think that everyone is the same, because they're not, you know, but they're all people, and they, like any other people, you know, they want to interact. How much they want to interact, that's different. So it's just important that we spread accurate information, you know, whenever we can, so that our kids, family, and friends and people that our children are surrounded with are accepting and understanding, especially in the Black community. Because, you know, I had an instance where I had a Black teacher tell me, you need to discipline your child more. And when I told her that he had autism, she's like, so what? You know, just because you're a teacher and just because you say you work in special education doesn't mean that you can tell me how to raise my child. And with that being said, if you are a parent with a child who has autism spectrum disorder, just because someone says they are a specialist doesn't necessarily mean that they may be, you know, what they call like old school, which means they have been in special education or in the therapeutic world for a long time and may not have adjusted to the new ways that therapists are supporting. You see how I use that word, supporting children with autism spectrum or adults. So now let's talk about the diversity, which I have been talking about, you know, within the spectrum. So as I said, it is a spectrum. And you will also hear a lot when people will say neurodiversity. So what is neurodiversity? So neurodiversity is a popular term that's used to describe differences in the ways that people's brain work. That the idea is that there's no correct way for the brain to work. It was actually a term coined in the 1990s to fight stigma and promote acceptance of people with autism. What? Did not know that. But it also includes other conditions, like I said, right? That involve neurological differences such as ADHD, learning disorders, like dyslexia and dyscalculia. So when you hear that term neurodiversity, doesn't necessarily always mean that person has autism spectrum disorder. It could just, it's really focused on how an individual brain works. differently, you know, which kind of like helps highlight the fact, you know, that people on the autism spectrum disorder, they possess their unique strengths and abilities. You know, you may have someone with autism spectrum disorder who is a mathematical genius. You may have someone with a detailed memory. You may have someone that's proficient in art. A lot of times when you are in spaces with children who are neurodiverse, in schools and in therapies, you'll see art a lot. My oldest son, he's a great artist. My youngest son, he has a detailed memory. If he hears it, even though he doesn't look like he's hearing it, he remembers everything that's being said. That speaks to the elasticity and how people's brains work. One of the things that my youngest, he had more difficulty in school than my oldest son, Xavier. And once we moved him to a special education school, he realized that he could learn. So now, even at, he's about to be 13, what? He's about to be a teenager. He will listen to someone and then he'll look at me and say, okay, mommy, can you tell me in a way that I can understand? It's not, he doesn't have any, it's not like his brain doesn't work, right? It's how people are explaining to him. He needs to find that connection to what you're saying. Sometimes he needs to see it. Sometimes he needs the bridge to a concept, and then he's off. You know, like, he surprises me every day because he makes connections that I don't see. And they could just be made off of me saying one thing to him, and he's off like a rocket. So, you know, one of the things I always tell my kids is, you know, we focus on their strengths. And as a parent of children who have ASD, it's something that I would love to see when people are interacting with my children. And I appreciate it, and it helps them come out of their shells. So I also want to talk about navigating support and resources for my parents out there who have children with ASD. But if you know someone who has children with ASD, now, having your child diagnosed, it's an experience. You know, sometimes it could be a denial, depending. Like, my first son, I was in denial until I saw the blog. By the time I got to my second son, I was accepting it. However, one of the biggest challenges is finding the right support and resources. Having that can be a game changer for families. So with that being said, that's why I created the Parent Decipher as a resource. When it came to my children's academics, I found that it was very difficult for me, one, to get the school to understand how to support my kids. But then when I needed assistance with getting the school to support my children, you know, it was a situation where basically, you know, lawyers would tell me, well, if nothing is broken, if they're not denying them, then you really don't have a case. It wasn't about having a case. It was about, I need to know how I can get my child where they need to be, and so that they can be nurtured, right? So with that being said, you know, I found resources, and I found resources that most people don't know about. So I decided that the Parent Decipher is going to be that. It's going to be a resource for parents with children with autism spectrum disorder. However, for me, it's an umbrella. So my son has dyslexia. So that's something that, you know, we talk about. My son has dyscalculia. You have children that just have that. You know, my daughter has ADHD. So this is the place where we can share all of those type of resources. They are life-changing, especially, you know, for adults, for parents, and for their children. Now, early intervention is so important. And it's important because think of it like this. Imagine you are struggling in math and you just, you know, the longer you struggle, you know, more withdrawn you become, the more quiet you become, the more you start, you know, stop interacting in different things. And then all of a sudden someone says, oh, you have dyscalculia or you have a learning disability and you're like 14. Yeah, whatever you say, like, I don't care. Cause at that point they've shut down. Like they've built up defenses. So in versus a child who was diagnosed early, this is just their norm. And then they're given the supports to accommodate themselves. So it's easier to support them versus that teenager where they've had years of struggle. And then now you want to slap this label on them. And they're like, I just want to be normal. What are you talking about? Okay. Plus, it can also be life-changing, period. So for instance, my 12-year-old son, he does speech therapy. He did speech therapy for years. However, he needed surgery on his tongue. And it's the frenulum, which is the piece like underneath your tongue. It needed to be clipped because he couldn't say certain sounds. And then as he got older, even though they did tell me, yeah, they did, I don't like surgery. I feel like let's try all the things first, okay? But it got to the point where it was no longer a speech thing. It's the tongue thrusting forward actually started to cause his teeth to buck, right? That's life-changing. My 16-year-old son right now, part of his diagnosis is underdevelopment. So he had an underdeveloped jaw. He had underdeveloped feet. And with that being said, so he has like, they like to call it duck feet, right? So your feet go out like this. but there's a time limit. So when it comes to bones, right, it has to be done basically within a certain time period while the bones are still flexible. Once they start to harden, then now you're looking at a situation where things have to be broken. So for instance, for my son's jaw, one jaw was developed correctly. The other one was undeveloped, so it was smaller. So they had to put a appliance in his mouth that literally we had to turn every so often to bring the jaw out. That's something that can only be done within a certain time period. If not, if it's found when he gets older, they have to literally break your jaw, right? Who's gonna walk around looking like Kanye because your parent didn't know, right? Or you didn't have an early intervention. Same thing for his feet. We had a hard time limit. I think that the podiatrist said he had to have the surgery by the time he was 14. I think 14 or 15. He said no later than 15. Because then not only did the surgery have to be more in depth, but it would never actually be corrected. So, you know, early intervention is a behavioral support. It helps support behavior, helps support academics, you know, physical disabilities, early intervention. I just can't speak on why it's so important. Which segues into the other thing that's important is specialized therapies. I mentioned that my children have done integrative listening systems, which is provided to them by an occupational therapist. Now, on that note, it used to be, well, it might still be depending on what state you're living in. An occupational therapist provides the service. However, it's considered specialized within occupational therapy, which means that sometimes your insurance won't cover it. It's something that has to be paid out of pocket. Now, with that being said, times have changed and they do have, what is it called? Therapy centers who work together, and integrated listening system is covered by your insurance. You just need to ask your child's therapist, if they are doing occupational therapy, about integrated listening systems to see if they actually have that program, and ask them to support your child. What's great about integrated listening systems is that it also supports all, you know, mental behavioral challenges. You know, one thing I love about it is that from an elderly perspective, it helps people with Alzheimer's. It helps people with their memory. It helps people with ADHD. Can't speak enough about it, right? But that's not the only specialized therapies, okay? So, like I said, you know, there's play therapist, speech therapist, social therapist. You know, it's just a plethora of therapists out here beyond, you know, the classic ones. Sometimes your child might need a classic therapist. We used to have one of those as well for my children's anxiety. That actually helped too. Think of therapists as being part of your child's tribe or family. Okay. So this is the team that you create around your child, right? So they're the ones that's going to give you a little bit of feedback when you have challenges in different spaces. One of them being school systems. So the next thing that's important as far as support is tailoring the educational program. So as a special education consultant, one of the things that I'm always doing with my kids and other people's children is to ensure that the education is a place where they can flourish, not flounder, which means they're not flopping around. You know, sometimes they have to flop a little bit just so you can be aware that this is not working. You know, so when it comes to special education or just a tailored educational program, we're talking about, you know, what kind of philosophy is the school using? What educational program are they using? Is it Montessori? What kind of reading program are you doing? If you're saying that the child is getting reading intervention, what kind of program is it? You know, there's so many different reading programs for children who are dyslexic. There is not a one size fit all in this world. So, you know, a tailored education program is the thing that's going to help them. It also helps them find the thing that they're good at. And one of the things with children who are exceptional, because I believe like these children are exceptional, right? Is finding that place or finding that thing that they are really, really good at. And once you can find that, then you can build off into other spaces. They have to have something that they know they're good at, they have confidence in, because a lot of times when you are in this space where you can feel you're not normal, sometimes some kids do, some kids don't. For my son, he did. He knew that he was different. So that was part of him being withdrawn. He was really, really good. He was in a bilingual school. He was really, really good at Chinese. Don't ask me. He was brilliant in it. However, he couldn't read. One of the hardest decisions that we had was to take it from him. But he also had art. So he just leaned more into his art, which gave him confidence. You know, and then we had added all of the other things that we just spoke about, that I just spoke about, early intervention, specialized programs. He just got, you know, brighter, brighter, and brighter, you know, and most importantly, he was able to talk to me. So when he was taking speech, he was like, oh, mom, people don't understand me. At that point, you could understand him. It wasn't that he thought it was the words that he was saying. It wasn't. What it was that some people with speech, right? There's expressive and receptive. Don't get me started, because I'll tell you all the tea. Long story short, there is expressive and receptive language. And if you want to know more about speech, you know, check out my episode. I'll leave it in the show notes, because I can't remember exactly the title right now because I've been growing. Where I speak to Darius about speech. So he'll tell you more about receptive and expressive language. But he had a challenge with expressive, which means what he was thinking necessarily was not what he was saying out of his mouth. What? Sounds like I'm having a little bit of that. But, you know, these are the things that can support families and parents and children of ASD: early intervention, specialized therapies, and tailored educational programs. You know, as a parent, navigating these options at first was very daunting, but connecting with my local therapist and actually having the first reading intervention program tutor, her son had autism, and from what I understand, his was severe, and she actually quit her job and she got well versed in so many different programs to support her son. And by the time I met him, I would never have known, you know, that he was severe. But having a parent like her support my son, she was able to tell me all of the pieces that I was not aware of. You know, she was like, have you gone to a developmental optometrist? Like, who knows what that is? She gave me the referral. She was able to tell me, you're wasting money on this reading remediation because this is not the problem. You really look at other things. Going to therapists and talking to them, and like when you take your child to therapist, they should be talking to you. Like, they should be telling you how to support your child at home. You know, they should be able to tell you how to talk to your child's school if need be. You know, these are the things that support us. Families support us. I, for a long time, I just kind of felt some kind of way, you know. I felt like people were judging me, you know, judging my kids, because they were socially awkward. So I unconsciously kind of created this world. I was very protective of my kids, like, you know, hovering around, not going to certain family functions. And it took me a long time to even realize that that's something that I was doing. So, you know, if you are a loved one of a family who has a child who has autism, you know, please be understanding, you know, ask questions, you know, see how you can support them. And sometimes for parents like myself, we don't know how to be supported. But it makes us feel so good when we aren't feeling like we're being judged. So, you know, those are the supports that are pivotal to, you know, children and families, you know, with, you know, a member who has autism spectrum disorder. Let's talk about, because it is Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month. So let's talk about creating supportive environments in schools, workplace, and communities that help everyone. So for instance, sensory-friendly adjustments and understanding social communication styles can be a huge difference. So what I have been loving right now is that the movie theaters now have sensory-friendly shows. Now, for those of you who don't know about sensory, right? But your child might like it and they might need it. When you go into the movie theaters, it is loud. And you gotta remember, that's what we want, right? The IMAX feeling. Boom, 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 boom. All that, right? That can be really scary. I mean, beyond that, it's loud. You know, the dramatic build up. My son, I used to call him a runner. He would run. What? Doesn't matter. He's out. Like, when the movie starts getting dramatic, he's out. But sensory friendly theaters means that the music and the sounds are not as powerful, right? Which makes it easier for them. So they do sensory friendly movies. They do it for plays. They even have sensory-friendly bags at museums for the families who are listening. If you didn't know that, I think that's real cute. So if you go to either customer service or I think it's like accommodations, or it just depends. Ask customer service. They have like these bags. So, you know, I forget. Sometimes I forget. Like, I'm a whole person, right? So sometimes I forget to bring our bag. You know, and they have the headphones in there. They have fidgets. They have sensory bags. It's awesome. But that's what sensory friendly means. It means like when individuals are overwhelmed, when things are too much, when it says sensory friendly, it means that either they have something there for them or the sound is muted. It's just the things that aggravate the senses, right? Understand social communication styles. You know, sometimes they'll be really loud. They don't know that they're loud. So, you know, just, you know, when you hear it, just kind of adjust. You know, they're not yelling at you, right? Some, you know, some want to talk about what they want to talk about. Sometimes, you know, they're listeners. You know, let's be honest. You know, you don't have to have an ASD to be like that. I just think that sometimes when we are in our world today with labels and stigmas, it can be, you know, a thing, right? So understanding social communication styles can be a huge difference. One of the things I appreciate with the people that we have, me and my kids have come in contact with, is that I can see the adults like kind of figuring out and kind of like coming down. My son is 16, like I said, but he's been tall forever. Okay. So when we went to Dubai, he was 12, but he was like my height, like 5'4". And he's like, so they pulled him to the side just because they kind of thought he was an adult. Right. And he was like, wait, my mom. And they realized, oh, okay. And they said, it's okay. You know, they came to me, it's like, because I had went through the gate, so I didn't see it because he was right behind me. And they came back and they said, you're his mom. And I said, yes. I said, he's only 12, you know. And they were like, it's okay. You know, can you come back? That is when you are in a situation where someone is changing based on social and, you know, communication, right? That's mostly appreciated. So, you know, when you're dealing with someone with ASD, you know, keep that in mind. One of the things that when my kids were undiagnosed, I knew that they had kind of communication issues, but I'll never forget. We went to a family event and a child said to his mom, what's wrong with him? He's weird. And it broke my heart. And he's a kid, so he doesn't know, but it really broke my heart. And I was like, well, what should I do? And that might have been the beginning of me withdrawing, right, to protect my kids. So, you know, paying attention to these things and being understanding supports families with ASD as well as the individuals. Okay, so, you know, as families, we're advocates. We're advocates without a diagnosis. We're advocates with a diagnosis. We all have this, okay? This is what we do in our day-to-day. You know, for those who are listening, your child does not have ASD. You still an advocate too, okay? We would love as a community that, you know, inclusion and diversity and acceptance, something that we all want. You know, so we would love the mindfulness when it comes to dealing with people in the community. So with that being said, I have kind of talked your ear off. I'm not sure, but I feel like I've given you a lot to think about. I would like to say, if you have any questions, right, any comments, anything you want me to think about and put out there, you know, please, you know, check out the show notes. Email me. I always respond. And since closing out the show now, you know what it is. You know, every episode, we always have a song. dedicated to this episode. So as I was prepping to get on the mic, because, you know, it's been a long time, that's the song I chose. It's Been a Long Time by Rakim. And I always share a lyric, right? So the lyric is, they said I changed the times from the rhymes that I thought of. So I made some more to put the new world in order. So that's the line. So today, that's what I'm doing as far as autism spectrum disorder. You know, putting a little thought out there about autism spectrum disorder. So as usual, thank you for listening to the Parenting Cipher. And be patient with yourself and your child. Till next time. Thank you for tuning into the Parenting Cipher. Are you feeling inspired, excited? We're here for you every step of the way. If you found value in today's conversation, hit that subscribe button and drop us a glowing 5-star review. Together, we're growing an incredible community dedicated to understanding and support. For an extra boost, don't forget to check out the resources in the show notes. Remember, every day is a journey. Cherish each moment and be kind to yourself and your child. Until we meet again, take care.